Hello, welcome to the Wednesday, October 21st, 2015 edition of the Sands and its Storms and its Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and recording today from Bentonville, Arkansas. And when recording on the road, it's of course always interesting to hear that there is even a listener here in Arkansas. So a quick shout out to James Harton, who apparently does listen regularly to this podcast. And in Diaries today, we got a very necessary reminder by Bojan that exploitability of vulnerabilities in web applications, in particular cross-site scripting, often depends on the web browser that you're using when you're trying to exploit a particular vulnerability. In the example that Bojan is presenting here, only Internet Explorer appears to fail to encode the user-supplied input, and as a result, it shows how the particular cross-site scripting vulnerability can be exploited. I think it shows that in addition to doing functional testing with different browsers, pen testing should certainly involve different browsers in order to really capture all of these cross-site scripting vulnerabilities. In our defending web application class, actually, we go into this a little bit with some of the defenses that browsers offer that sometimes lead to false negatives as you're trying to verify whether or not a particular application is cross-site scriptable. And Oracle today released its quarterly critical patch update, and of course with that we also got updates for Java. Overall, 154 vulnerabilities are being patched across different Oracle products. 25 of them apply to Java, and 20 of those 25 are exploitable by Java running in the browser. About 7, if I counted correctly, have a CVSS score of 10, which means that they can lead to full remote code execution. According to Oracle, so far none of these vulnerabilities has been exploited in the wild. However, we have seen in the past a lot of exploits against Java, so you probably do want to make sure that you do patch Java as soon as possible. As far as the other patches go, it covers the entire Oracle product database, so a little bit too much to summarize here in this podcast, and I'll leave it up to you to check what applies to you and what doesn't. And let's encrypt the initiative that I've talked about before that promises free SSL certificates for everybody has reached another milestone with having its certificate cross-signed by IdentTrust. IdentTrust is a widely trusted certificate authority. So with this cross-signature for the Let's Encrypt certificate authority, Let's Encrypt can now create certificates that will be trusted by most browsers. They set up a test page and I just gave it a quick try and it seems to work fine in my browsers. The initiative is sponsored by Mozilla, Akamai, Cisco and others, and with that they hope to not only make certificates free for everybody but also to make it easier to manage them by offering scripts and such that will automatically download new certificates as they're needed by your systems. So it's not just about making them cheaper, there are already some free and well-respected certificate authorities, but also making them easier to deploy and manage. And a paper by researchers of the Ruhr University at Bochum does show a number of severe vulnerabilities in Western Digital's My Password Encrypted Drives. These drives come in a number of different varieties. These researchers looked foremost at USB versions of this drive, and they found that in some cases it is relatively easy to, for example, retrieve the encryption key that's used to encrypt the actual data, either in its decrypted form or in its encrypted form. Now, this key is always encrypted with a key that's derived from the user's password. However, the actual data encryption key that's used by these devices is then generated with essentially weak entropy, so it's not really all that terribly hard to brute force that key. or to brute force it offline if the encrypted key can be retrieved. In general, encrypted drives work sort of all the same way in that you have an encryption key that's being used to encrypt the actual data, and then the user's password is just used to protect this encryption key. So this way you don't need to re-encrypt the entire hard drive in case you want to change your password. All you need to do is re-encrypt the actual data encryption key. But if the data encryption key does leak, then of course it doesn't matter how strong the password is that was used to encrypt that key. The paper is somewhat a complex read because it covers a number of different hardware versions of these drives. So if you own one of these drives, or if you're concerned about the security of these drives, please refer to the original papers for any detail. Well, and that's it for today. Thanks again for listening. And if you have any friends or so, let them know about this podcast. Talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.